Until the end of the 19th century, the Earth's population was relatively stable. We entered the 20th century with around 1.5 billion people. And although women were having a lot of babies, the average survival rate was only 2.1 children per woman. But then conditions improved, and Europe experienced a population explosion, as women continued to have lots of children, and they survived. However, within two generations, the birth rate had dropped, and we're back to around 2.1 children per woman. And this is a pattern we can see all over the world. Female fecundity is high and survival rates are low, keeping the population stable. Then, as conditions improve and survival rates increase, the population explodes. But within two generations, the birth rate has dropped right back, stabilising the population again. This means that probably around 2050, we'll see the global population plateau. So does this mean we should stop worrying about the current population explosion? And could it even mean that come 2050, we'll start to see the population begin to decrease? Professor Sir David King is from the Smith School of Enterprise and the Environment at Oxford University and is the ex-chief scientific advisor to the government.
It will reduce, but that has penalties as well. So we can look, for example, Japan, where female fecundity has dropped well below the 2 level, and so the Japanese population is shrinking. They're not making up for that by people coming into their country. So what you've got, with well-being improving, and the Japanese life expectancy is now 84, 85, it means you've got an aging population. So a much higher proportion of the people are in retirement than before. And so the people aged 20 to 65, who are the workforce producing the wealth-creating capabilities for the nation, becoming a smaller and smaller fraction. It's not only Japan. The surprise, I think, is that the lowest female fertility rates are now in Italy, in Spain, and in Portugal, where they've gone down to 1.3 per woman. So what you have is already in Italy, because they haven't got a high immigration level, is a diminishing population and an aging population. So there are problems associated with going to a high population and then reducing. But I do think that by the end of the century, the population will have dipped below 9 billion. We'll be heading down to 8 billion for these reasons. The population dynamics require us to focus on education, with a focus on female education and female empowerment, and of course, education about contraception. I think we can't avoid that. I don't think anyone is going to be arguing that we should follow the Chinese example and limit families to one child per family. But it's worth noting that the Chinese, through that one child per family policy, have already reduced the world's population probably by about a third of a billion. Whereas in India, the female fecundity is still high, and so the Indian population is likely to reach 1.5 billion. China is another country where the percentage of the people who are at work is going to reduce as we move forward in time because of the aging population.
Although we might be able to ensure that, you know, we use our resources more sustainably and perhaps we could actually support 9 billion people on the planet, is that actually going to happen, that we can support 9 billion? Or realistically, are we going to have to drop it back? However that might happen, we are going to have to drop that number back.
The two sides to the answer to that question. The one is, do we have the global governance procedures to manage all this? Because we can make very bad mistakes. So, for example, we're going to need much more food than we're producing now. But look at the state of Victoria in Australia, where they've had these fires recently. State of Victoria is a tinderbox, so is South Australia, for the simple reason that they've had 8 or 9 successive drought years. Now, Victoria has a large agricultural community which are having to give up farming because it's becoming desertified as a result of this. Now, arguably, that is a climate change effect in practice. Now in the state of Victoria, they're building massive desalination plants, and by the end of this year, one-third of the fresh water for the state of Victoria, including the city of Melbourne and all the major towns, is going to come from desalination. Desalination is a very energy-intensive process. Australia has a lot of coal, so naturally you burn old coal to make fresh water. But burning coal is causing the global warming that causes the desertification in the first place, and you've got the worst possible outcome. You're making the problem that you're trying to deal with worse through the use of your technology. Equally, when you go to the Middle East, you will find all these wonderful green golf courses and green areas produced by desalination, technology at work. But burning oil to produce golf courses does not seem to be a smart way forward. So we need much better global governance than we have the capability of at the moment. So on the one hand, I'm saying it's a global governance issue. On the other hand, it's an economic issue. For example, beef takes 16 times as much water to produce as grain. And so as fresh water becomes a real problem, we will see less beef in our stores, prices of beef will go up, and the economics will mean that we will switch more to a vegetarian-style diet, which, by the way, will be good for us when we'll be less obese as well. So I think economics will manage the choices that we have, and we will make different choices. But at the same time, we all know that because we have rich and poor in all of our societies, we will still see aspirations towards the energy-intensive processes. If you drive a car that consumes an awful lot of petrol, in general, you tend to have a higher status in society. You drive a very big, heavy Rolls-Royce, Ferrari, whatever, it's likely to be an energy consumer. We have tended to give high status to people who are high energy consumers. We need to somehow invert that and give much more status to people who are conscious of the need to conserve and manage sustainable living. And for all of us, that's a challenge. I was brought up in a society thinking that energy was basically a freebie.
That's Professor Sir David King.
Interviews from Passion for the Planet.
Copyright Passion for the Planet.
Listen to more interviews online.
Hear health, environment, lifestyle, personal growth, and business experts when it suits you. This service is free. Register now at passionfortheplanet.com.
Find out more at passionfortheplanet.com.